Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 145. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. What's up, good sir?
Hey, we're here at the work in progress Phillips house recording tonight. Been without a kitchen for a little while, in the middle of getting a little upgrade done. But, you know, it's been a little bit like camping, I'd say, Kevin, out here.
As I noted, it has not been that long ago that I was renovating my own kitchen in my condo prior to selling it. I am not jealous of what's going on there, because I did much of what you're endeavoring to do at the current moment.
Yeah, it really upends, you know, things in general.
Yeah. So it's always a little rough. Now, do you have good grilling recipes? I would assume.
Yeah, that's we probably could do some grilling. It does seem like a bit of an effort to do, kind of like on a weekday night. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just being a wuss about it.
Just go hot dogs all week long, baby.
No, we've had some success with doing ribs recently. That's kind of been so the ribs have been a favorite around here recently. But that's a little bit rough to kind of prepare and, you know, do the rub and let it kind of marinate and then smoke it for a few hours and all that stuff. It's a little much for a weekday evening.
Those are a little tough.
But hot dogs, I suppose, to be fair, we could just
hamburgers, throw those on. Yeah. You gotta go kind of basic with your menu at that. And we've actually had a pretty decent week. We're ready to have some persons over on Saturday, and we were not pleased to find out that it is probably going to rain and a lot on that day.
Oh, well, you can't do much about the weather.
Nope. So, you know, these things do happen. But I will look forward to having the ribs at some point.
Sure. We were looking forward to coming over and checking out your festivities there on Saturday at some point. So hopefully, I don't think the rain will keep us away, Kevin.
The rain does not keep football players from playing games.
So good. What a masterful segue.
And an evergreen segment this year on OPA is Pittsburgh Steelers Corner, with a little bit of a dose of Pittsburgh Penguins Corner from yours truly. Steelers had a bye week, so even though we skipped a week in recording, we did not miss a whole lot. Other than pretty early on, and I was, gotta admit, I was not surprised that Mason Rudolph was deemed clear of the protocol, and he is ready to come back for this game. It really only made sense from a human perspective, if you're really trying to protect against concussions, of letting a guy at least have a couple of weeks rest when it's easily right there.
Yeah, I guess that timing wise did work out there with the bye week and letting old Duck take over there for a week. You know, that's, but I don't know much about the medical end of things. You know, is that enough time to rest up from a concussion? It seemed like he had a pretty serious one. But I don't know.
I mean, they seem to, the doctors seem to think everything's cool in the gang. So I guess I will defer to them as to his fitness, since I am not there testing him, nor would I have any idea of what to actually test for.
The thing that worries me a little bit is that I think the team doctors may have a motivation to kind of clear people be on the side of maybe erring towards clearing them early rather than erring towards more recovery time, since they are employed by the teams usually. Or is that how it works for the concussion protocol? I don't know. We probably should look this stuff up.
I believe it's independent.
Okay. Well, that could be different then. I don't know.
I think it's got to be, but I'm not completely sure on that. But if it is just a team doctor, they do definitely have some say in it. I believe, though, that even Rudolph himself had said that he felt like he was ready to play against San Diego. I still call them San Diego.
Yeah.
Even though they've been in Los Angeles for at least a couple of years now.
Yeah. Did we talk about that game last time, Kevin? I think we probably did.
No, I don't think we did actually talk about the game. I think we previewed the game.
Oh, that was just crazy, but just the amount of Steelers fans that was in attendance there.
We definitely did not talk about that. That was, I guess that's happening at all of their games, that a lot of the visitors' fans are coming in. That just really seems like a disaster.
Someone said it was like, they likened it to a concert venue, like where your, you know, favorite quote unquote, you know, band comes to town and you just go to see them there.
Wow.
Which is not too good for the Los Angeles Chargers.
Correct. You are correct. I am incorrect.
That's pretty rough stuff.
Yeah.
It was crazy to see because it had to be 80%+ Steelers fans.
Well, and I guess I hadn't realized exactly how small the venue was too.
True.
Because it's the soccer stadium and it only seats 27,000. I'll tell you what, it was a pretty rowdy 27,000.
Yeah, they were pretty loud, I think, for the broadcast.
Yeah.
But if they added more seats, they're going to get a bigger stadium, I think, in 2020.
I believe that is the case, like a real NFL stadium.
Because this is like something for the Olympics, from what I understand. And it's a soccer stadium also.
Oh, right.
But they, who's to say that people are going to, you know, flock to buy tickets when they're not now, you know? It just seems so bizarre. A city like Los Angeles doesn't seem to particularly be a football town.
But everyone keeps on forcing the issue all the time.
And they're trying to give them two teams, you know, at once. Like, does that make sense to anyone? I mean, really?
Logistically, they definitely have enough people to support. Because, I mean, there's two soccer teams there.
Right.
And I think both of them do okay in attendance. I don't really keep track of MLS attendance, to be quite honest with you. I pay attention to the Crew's attendance, but that's about as far as it goes.
I feel like there might be more soccer fans in Los Angeles than football fans. You know, I know there's a big, like, you know, Latino kind of culture in Los Angeles. A lot of people, you know, football is big in that part of the world.
Right.
So it's reason to think that, you know, football might be more popular. I mean, soccer might be more popular than football.
And it's just there is a difference between filling a 27,000 size stadium and like an NFL team is usually at least 65,
right,
to 70, something in that 65 to like 75, I would say, because they don't go to the absurd sizes that some of the college stadiums go to.
No, like Michigan or Penn State,
Yeah, Ohio
Ohio
State,
State.
like half the Big Ten and half of the SEC
Yeah.
have like 100,000 plus stadiums. So, yeah, I mean, it would be it that would be when it gets truly bizarre for the Chargers, is if when they upgrade to that size stadium, if it's still like 80% of the opposing fans coming to the games. Like, I the NFL, like, it's just going to be weird. Well, maybe they can bury the Chargers just because they're terrible. Off of TV for the most part. But
What if they
that's going to be
re
a bad look at some point when it's just all the visitors, the fans, it the San Diego. Oh, and there we go
There we
again.
go.
The Los Angeles Chargers games.
Maybe they should become the, if that doesn't work out, they could move to Columbus to become the Columbus Chargers, giving Ohio its third NFL team. I don't know. It
It
would be
would
as crazy as going to Los Angeles, in my opinion.
it, yeah, that would be pretty crazy to have an NFL team plopped in here. I guess I think like I don't think you could get the support. Like it would be so weird for anyone to pick Columbus, I guess. Like it at this point, like you know, like I it's been this way the whole time we've been here. There's definitely three parts of Columbus. There's the Pittsburgh part of Columbus, the Cleveland part of Columbus, and the Cincinnati part of Columbus.
Right. As far as NFL fans go,
Yeah, as far as NFL fans
it's we
go.
don't want to get people to, from outside Columbus. It's not as though the city is divided into wards where you have to live in a certain region if you're a fan of the Steelers or the Browns or Bengals. But that's the general breakdown of the NFL fans here. You get some oddballs thrown in, but
Yeah, I've definitely met too many Patriots fans.
yeah. That's true.
just in and of itself. But yeah, I mean, and there was even near the condo, there was a Green Bay Packers bar. If you remember, on tap was a Packers backers. Which
Interesting.
yeah, it was not the largest bar, but they did I saw some of the pictures from the games and it got pretty crazy in there, evidently. I never went myself because whatever. Like, I guess I'm ambivalent to Green Bay.
Yeah.
You
They've
know, I
never
don't
really been
really.
a rival.
Right.
They've only played against each other in games that mattered a few times, I feel like.
Yeah, because I don't feel like the Steelers were that good during the Brett Favre era for the most part.
Yeah.
So, like, the Steelers didn't have that much at stake. Like, I feel like that was kind of that kind of strange part of Cowher's career where, yeah, because he won or got to the Super Bowl early and then didn't get anywhere for a long time or kept on losing in the championship game and then finally broke through there at the end.
Yeah.
So it was kind of that time period in between where you couldn't quite get things done. So, like, yeah, they didn't, and I don't feel like the scheduling was the same. Like now you play like all the teams like every 4 years because there's 32 teams. I don't always feel like the schedule was that organized in our younger days. I could be wrong, so I don't feel like there's as much cross conference play as there is now.
Well, isn't it true that, I mean, there was fewer conferences. I feel like there's probably more teams in each conference. Maybe there was like more games were taken up each year by a conference play.
Yeah, I want to say that maybe you played three times against the teams in your division.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Because there was the there's only the Central, East, and West divisions, I believe, at that time in the AFC and NFC. So, there was, I feel like there might have been more teams grouped together even, but maybe they've evened out at this point.
Yeah, I think it was six in a division.
Yeah, that sounds right. So that's like, what, 12 games?
Oh, yeah, that's 12 games. So you only had four games outside of that.
You'd probably mostly be playing in your conference. So you would only have a couple games, I would think, outside.
Yeah, your conference.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I guess I've never really had anything against Green Bay, so whatever. Like, that was just there, but it was kind of weird. But it also shows you, I mean, Columbus is a big enough city that I'm sure that there are other backers bars that I am unaware of. Sure. But those are Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Cincy. And I kind of think that it goes in that order sometimes. Pittsburgh and Cleveland might flip-flop and who has more fans in Columbus. There are a lot, because you've kind of mentioned, like, not being warded off. Like, we have lived in different parts of the city, and we have gone to bars in different parts of the city, and there are always a poop ton of Steelers fans in every bar, no matter what part of the city that you're in.
And I believe there are several bars that are, you know, known for being places that Steelers fans go to watch games too. So,
you know,
analogous to the Packer backer bar, but it's true. I don't know. There, yeah, I would say that the Bengals is probably in third place in terms of fan base here, but
yeah,
for whatever reason, the television markets have decided to prioritize the Ohio teams, so the Pittsburgh fans get screwed around here.
Well, the funny thing is, though, the Steelers are playing another Monday night game.
Oh,
so I mean, that is the other thing about Rudolph getting it. He gets an extra day of not getting contact to the head. Which is probably not such a bad thing. But there are a lot of primetime games for the Steelers. And there are just a lot of games now that are unique at this point. Like, in some ways, that Sunday day game is going by the wayside. Like, the last couple of weeks with the bye weeks starting, I'm like, oh my God, I can really tell the difference now. Like, I don't know if I'm paying more attention to the NFL in some respects than I used to. I still know that there are some things that I am not as big a stat head as I once was. Like, I feel like that part of following the NFL is, I know that and maybe it's just because a lot of articles that I read incorporated in to their analysis.
You're not like, perusing Football Outsiders like every day trying to get the latest DVOA ratings or anything.
Yeah, like that definitely used to be on my daily list of chores to do. but it is not the case anymore. You know, because and again, though, the people that I read incorporated into their articles. At certain points, and it's like, why do I need to go there then? Like, they've kind of cut out, and that's the other thing, like, I guess I kind of paid attention to the whole league, and now if I just kind of get that number in an article about the Steelers, like, that's all the information I really need to have. You know, I don't need to know if the Patriots are the best at it or the worst at it. In a lot of regards. So it's just like, I know what that ranking means, so I can kind of understand the context of everything.
Yeah. It is good to get, like, I don't know, I feel like that too. I used to get more into the stats and details, and it's just really not that important anymore for some reason. I still like to watch the games, though.
Yeah, or else we wouldn't be pulling it onto the show every week for a solid third of the show.
You got me there.
But hey, that's what we're here for. You're gonna go with our whims. And many of our whims can...
Yeah, there's a lot of whims in the fashion world, Kevin. Some people might feel like it's driven by whims. Although I would say men's fashion has really not been whim-driven, historically speaking. One thing I kind of like to do when there's a gallery of the different presidents, or their portraits or little statues or whatever, is to kind of look at their style of dress. And the thing that I notice is that, you know, the very early presidents, you know, their George Washington has this like ruffled lace or whatever.
Oh, okay.
And he's wearing a wig.
Right.
But very early on after that, they switch over to wearing some kind of suit and tie combination. And that really continues for the next, you know, however long, 150 years to present day.
Right.
And something that this article that we're here to discuss...
from Vox.com. How the power suit lost its power.
Yeah. And it's something that I think I have kind of noticed.
It's pretty rare to see someone in a full suit. Like, even my new boss, he does not normally wear a tie, so I would not call that a suit. Like, at least by the definition that they seem to be going by in this article. Because they're definitely saying that slacks are not part of a suit. So, like, what I'd normally wear to work, and I would, to me, a button, I still feel like I dress nicer than some people in my work environment, where I have a button down and slacks on at all times.
Yeah.
And I still don't feel terribly fancy. Like today I wore in my, since it is Halloween time, I have Halloween ties that I do like to wear into the office at times. And Wednesday is usually that day of choice. So I do like to wear in a tie sometimes, but that, to me and to this article, does not, qualify as wearing a suit. I'm just throwing a tie on top of, you know, a slightly more relaxed, suit option, I guess.
Right. But you're not wearing like a suit jacket, you know,
No.
So yeah, I
am not wearing a special special hat. No. Although I do, as you can attest, I figured that everyone could just go ahead and buy a suit for my second wedding, because honestly, it was the same price as running a goddamn tuxedo.
Yeah.
And at least people have something to go home with then.
And there are still some occasions to wear a suit, I would say.
I guess I do have suits, and I do like them, honestly. Like, I don't like to wear them all the time, but for special occasions, I do like it, because I like vests, too, and that was something that, I believe they mentioned the vest in here, too, but that does not, you know, a vest on its own does not count as a suit, which I understand. Like, because I can just wear a vest in with a shirt underneath, and it's not a suit.
No, no. So that would not count as a suit. And the thing that I thought was interesting, and I had not really kind of thought about on my own, is that maybe the reason why the suit has become less popular is it's more becoming more associated with being in trouble. Like, you go before somebody goes before a judge, they're wearing a suit. Oh. Or the example of Mark Zuckerberg, who is famously a hoodie enthusiast, put on a suit to go to Congress to be grilled there.
I guess I was not aware of the fact that he was a hoodie enthusiast.
He was for a long time, but then I think he kind of went through a phase where he realized, he said something about, since the company was going through a harder time, he was going to wear a suit to the office, or a tie to the office, I think was what he said.
Oh.
Which, whatever. But
I guess that is the one thing I do like about the ties, is that I can do like the make a statement kind of tie. Like, yeah, there are a lot of cool designs, I guess. And I guess that's the one thing I do like about suits, is like, there is definitely a design element to me that is always attractive in a suit.
Yeah.
I was just kind of laughing. I've listened to Unspooled, and I believe we've mentioned this before, but they were talking about the how famous the suit from North by Northwest is. And I guess I did not realize it was that famous, because I have not heard about it. But I did look it up, though, and it is a pretty sharp suit. I'm not sure that it's my favorite suit that I've seen in a movie. But it does have a certain panache to it that I enjoy.
You would say it's still in style today?
Yeah, I think you could pull it off. It's maybe a little bit longer than most people would wear it, in my opinion. But I do like the kind of the monotony of the Keller.
Yeah, it's very matchy-matchy, you might say, or fairly matchy-matchy anyway.
Yeah, like there's not a...
Well, there's actually subtle differences, I think, but it is very like of the same palette, I guess.
Right. Yeah, it's not like there's checkers and pinstripes or something like that. You know, it's not kind of a gangstery. Like, I guess I'd always think of a more ostentatious suit in like a gangster movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. This is a fairly casual looking outfit there, but for a suit. I guess I'm more of a like sports jacket guy myself, kind of less formal. I feel like you can have a little fun with those without being as formal as a suit. But maybe that wouldn't count as a suit either. I'm not sure. We may have to get a ruling from the judges.
I feel like there is, you need to have jacket, tie, obviously button down, and some type of matching pant. Because I guess in this article, I was a little bit confused. I'm not sure. To me, there's not much of a difference between slacks and like a suit pant. I know that the suit does, you know, the pants usually go with the jacket. I understand that it kind of comes as a unit, but you can mix and match anything as long as...
Sure, I think you can, but they might, maybe for a suit, they are specifically saying that the pants and jacket have to be made from the same material. As to really match as a suit. This is a really, Nazi article in terms of sticking to the letter of the law here. What's a suit and what's not?
Well, yeah, I thought that maybe their definition of suit was a tad too narrow. I think you can widen that avenue a little bit.
Sure, it could be.
Because, I guess because I was talking about the vests earlier, like you could get picky and just say that you need to go three piece, baby. Go hardcore. Do the jacket, the vest, and the tie. And rock that bad boy.
Cufflinks?
Oh. And I guess I just kind of thought about this. I always talk on the Almost Live, definitely half-assed review of WWE Raw, blog column that I am jealous of the Miz, Mike Mizanin, from Cleveland, Ohio. His suit collection is something to behold. That guy has spent a lot of money on his suits. A lot. And they, you can tell, because they are very nice suits.
I wonder where he finds the occasion to wear them so often.
In the WWE ring, of course.
Oh, well, there you go. That's the perfect time.
He is not in trouble, though, when he wears his suit.
Unless he's on the receiving end of a flying elbow or something of the like. But that's not really what the article was talking about, I don't think.
No.
Outside the scope of the article.
Yeah. And I guess I do kind of understand the psychology of what you brought up, that there are a lot of occasions. And I do feel like, just in general, it probably started really right around when we started getting to real, well, quote unquote, real gainful employment. You know, not being some type of fast food and or low wage job. I feel like the suit was definitely out already.
Yeah, when I had started my first like office job, it was I remember wearing a tie and like a nice shirt to work, and like an older guy coming up to me and being like, "Hey, what are you doing?" Like, we had to like work to not have to wear that. It's like, you know, stop dressing up, basically.
Yeah, it the new office, people just kind of went like, "Oh, okay, he just kind of does that." Because a lot of people do not, you know, I do see ties every now and again from people, but no one wears one as consistently as I do. And I only do it once a week, for the most part. Now, with the Steelers playing on Monday, I might bust out my Steelers tie on Monday and add to the collection.
Special occasion, weeknight game.
Yeah, weeknight game. I could have done it the last Monday night game. I didn't really think about it.
But that wouldn't cause any friction at work dealing with the non-Steelers crowd?
Oh, no. I get more guff about being a Penguins fan because my boss grew up in Buffalo, New York, and is a avid Sabres fan. And there are a number of Blue Jackets fans who, as usual, do not like Penguins fans.
No, there's a rivalry there, I'd say.
Yeah, there's definitely a stronger feeling on that side in that regard than I have. But
yeah,
there's definitely a rivalry there, that's for sure. It's to me still not Philadelphia Flyers level or Washington Capitals level, but it is, you know, hey, being top three is not too shabby, I suppose.
I would say not, Kevin.
So, yeah, I do not get that much friction, honestly, about the Steelers stuff, which I have worn in frequently of the past month.
Now, do you think if you wore like a full on like suit jacket, matching pants, tie at the office, would you get like a stronger level of like strange looks, you think, than you would with just the tie?
Oh, well, I think that people would start to, that might get people's attention. Because I guess I was sitting here thinking, like, I was like, man, I guess I could bust out the suit jacket every now and again to wear into the weather is at the right temperature to wear one in at the current moment. Like, that's the one thing that I've always found weird about suit jackets is that, like, they're so heavy themselves, I don't want to wear a jacket on top of that because, like, I just get too hot almost as soon as that happens. And I guess, but I mean, I know that with the wife, we had to do a couple of Christmas dinners with her, the old portion of the hospital that she was with. And I always wore a suit jacket in, and you either end up being cold going into the venue because it's not warm enough really to fend off true winter. Or you awkwardly wear a jacket that is somehow larger than that jacket over top of it. So I really do only like jackets for kind of a narrow territory of weather concerns. That is one of my big problems with suit jackets.
Yeah, sometimes you can find like an overcoat that will fit over your jacket, but then you need to have like a specific coat that you're just going to wear with your jacket. And it's maybe hard to justify that purchase and storage.
Yeah, it seems like a little much for something that will get minimal use.
So yeah, I'm imagining that it is a little bit, just judging from your reaction, Kevin, it sounds like it would be a little out of style in some ways for you to show up wearing a full-on jacket to work. I would say the same for me, for sure. People would definitely be looking at me like I was a little bit crazy. But
yeah, because I did see a couple of people went to a meeting today. But they were in jeans, a button down, and a suit jacket.
Okay.
You know?
No, so not a full suit then.
Yeah, definitely not. Jeans were involved, definitely not a full suit.
But, yeah.
You know, but that's... that is kind of another one of those casual, but kind of dress up looks that are more prevalent these days, I would say. There's kind of like a, you know, it's a mix right. of casual and business.
Very popular.
Very popular.
Seeming like you're authentic or something, you know.
Yeah, that is closer to a suit these days than...
And wearing a suit, it just seems like it is kind of inauthentic almost in some ways. Like, is this really, you know, can I... There's like the idea of an empty suit, like...
Well, it's just, in some ways... they're not always made to be practical. Suits, like, it's supposed to look good in a picture and when you're kind of, like, doing some
doing business.
minimal tasks. You know, when you're trying to kind of move around and things of that nature, like, I don't always feel like they're the most, what's the right word? Because dynamic is not really the right word that I'm looking for here. Mm. And I guess maybe I just stick with practical. It's because like suit pants are not as to me. And I guess that is maybe the difference between a suit pant and slacks. I think that slacks are probably more comfortable. And maybe I'm agreeing with Vox now. I'm talking myself into agreeing with the article. I do feel like there's a, because I still do wear my suit pants into work sometimes. But, and there is a different feel to them. They're, you know, because they're tailored to be perfectly sized for me, I was 20 pounds lighter, which doesn't completely help. But they do kind of, they're a little bit tighter on the inseam than my other pants, just in general, because of the way they're made. Like, there is definitely more of a formality to them than, and I do think that maybe, and maybe that's what they're trying to get at, slacks, or I feel like there's a little more give in there, in the crotchal region.
Yeah, the kind of material is probably more forgiving with slacks. There, you give you some slack. I guess it's right there in the name.
It is in the name, I suppose. If I had just analyzed it a little bit more before starting this topic. Yeah.
Now, my question I was wondering about is how much more crazy looks would you get like, what do you think the degree of magnitude is between wearing a full suit to the office and wearing like full, you know, 1700s dress?
Oh, like coming in looking like George Washington?
Yes. Is that like twice as crazy? More than that?
Maybe I should find out on Halloween and just go in dressed up as George Washington. Oh, I thought we were all dressing up today. What? We're not?
Yeah, maybe not.
You don't like the powdered wig?
Maybe it's not good to, you know, in these troubled times to go in a political costume.
He was a Whig. No, he was a Tory.
Which was the... You know what? I believe, and I'm sorry to jump in here, Kevin, but fact check you.
Please. I may very well be wrong, so...
I believe that Washington did not officially have a party. He was they did not intend for there to be political parties in the beginning, and he was just sort of unanimously voted in. Basically, everybody wanted him to be the first president.
Yeah, but you know, you always get that general bump.
It didn't hurt that he kind of led the revolution there, seemingly so. That was a good feather in his cap, so to speak.
Yeah.
Which may have been a literal feather in his cap back in those days.
Yeah. I mean, Napoleon did have some rockin' suits. I will mention that. Like, if we're talking about some generals, like the fox, we're going out on a fox hound hunt look that George Washington had, maybe to me not quite as stylish as I feel like Napoleon liked to rock the coattails in his suits, which I appreciate, even though he was a shorter gentleman.
And he had sort of a wacky hat, as I recall.
Yeah, yeah, he could rock a pretty wacky hat too. But I do think that Washington had something similar. I don't think it was quite as out there as what Napoleon wore. But the French, you know how they are, Ken.
Sorry
to all our French fans.
And Napoleon, 5'7".
Oh.
So I feel like that's one of those things where for some reason people think he's... Like, I used to think he was really short, too.
Yeah, like there have been short Napoleon complex is a thing, but I mean, yeah, 5'7" is not particularly short.
Oh, it says here if Napoleon was 5'2" in the French measurement system, he would have been 5'6" in the British system. This would make him average sized man for his time.
Oh, okay.
So I guess there was maybe some misunderstanding about the measurement units that kind of led to this
erroneous
myth being started. Yeah.
Huh.
Well, that's a little bonus fact. That wasn't even one of our main topics. Can you believe it?
Yeah, suits from around the world. Suits from world leaders who may or may not kill lots of people. Yeah. But yeah, I don't think there are too many suits to go through in that... I guess it'd be kind of in that era when they would have worn kind of a suit to battle kind of a situation. Or, you know, I know that they wear them now like for formal occasions, but they do not wear those out the battle.
Like the dress?
Yeah, uniform. Like the dress uniform, whether it's for the... you know, the Air Force or the Army or the, you know, Marines. Like, everyone kind of has their own style that they have for their dress uniforms.
No, they've kind of toned those down, I think. That was probably a good move. It's not great to be wearing, you know, bright red, for instance, when you're going out to fight.
Yeah, I always think about how terrible that is. But a lot of people like to do that, honestly. Like, it just seems like a bad plan, though. Like, you are not helping to disguise yourself when you're wearing red at any point in history.
Yeah, it had to have been something to do with changing battle tactics or some such thing. But, yeah, it's not great, I don't think.
Yeah, it's definitely not going to hurt to change to a more muted killer.
So speaking of things that you might think are not great, the creator of Labradoodles seems to think that his creation is not great, Kevin, or he wishes he hadn't done it. Quote, I believe he's the greatest regret of his life was creating these Labradoodles.
Yeah, this article was really strange to me. Because I believe in it, he was tasked with basically creating this dog for someone who was hypoallergenic.
To be able to combine the kind of temperament of a Labrador Retriever with the hypoallergenic properties of poodle, rather.
Yeah.
And after working through some attempts, this breeder was able to have success. Because the problem was that the poodles did not have the temperament to be... It was to breed a guide dog, basically.
Oh, yeah.
Because a poodle could not have the right temperament to be a guide dog. But a Labrador was causing allergies. So he was able to do this in 1989, I believe. Yes.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's been a while. And I guess it's kind of one of those things that my sister-in-law is a vet. And obviously she does not deal with every animal type. But I do feel like her and some other people I know that are in the veterinary industry, there are a lot of breeds that they don't maybe particularly like to deal with. I do not feel like Labradoodle is on that list. And I don't feel like, unless someone's hiding statistics from me or something about Labradoodles, I don't feel like people, like the Labradoodles I've seen seem to be of a good temperament. So I don't understand why he thinks he created a Frankenstein, because it seems like it's accomplishing exactly what it was supposed to.
Yeah, he's saying when I'm out and I see these Labradoodles, I can't help myself. I go over them in my mind. Conran said, I look at them thinking, does it have hip dysplasia? Has it got elbow problems or any other problems I can see? I find that the biggest majority are either crazy or have a hereditary problem. I mean, that's a pretty strong stereotype there, but...
You know, maybe I could ask my sister-in-law and my brother-in-law whether they see those symptoms. But it is one of those things, too, where I remember my my ex-wife saying that it was always good to get dogs that were mutts because that usually bred out the hereditary problems. But then Kia, who was, as far as we knew, three different kinds of dog, at least, because we think it was German Shepherd, Basset Hound, and Foxhound. She ended up having hip dysplasia, which is common in German Shepherds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I mean, she thought at the time, and I mean, I don't know if she was just wrong, you know, she had bad information at the time, or if things have changed, or if that just kind of happens. Like, you know, there's kind of a narrow amount of problems that dogs are going to develop, I feel like.
Well, from what I understand, there can be kind of more problems introduced into a breed if breeders are not careful about checking for these problems and kind of not breeding them into their, the population.
Well, and that was kind of interesting. My in-laws just got a cat that they don't want her to breed because she had a hernia.
Mm.
So my in-laws got her at a discount because of, it was from a breeder. But they knew that it wasn't going to, even though it was a female cat, it wasn't going to be able to reproduce itself.
So I guess this...
So some people do, kind of keep an eye out for that kind of thing.
But I think it seemed like there was such a demand for this breed of dog. And here's the thing. I don't think that's really this breeder's fault that all these people wanted to buy a Labradoodle, right? I mean, I guess...
Yeah, it kind of seems like a perfect solution in a lot of ways. Because I do feel like I've heard that poodles can be a little high-strung. So to me, there's a little bit of a problem there. And if you kind of... my wife had talked about maybe getting a hypoallergenic dog for our next dog whenever we go that route. And just because she is allergic to, fur.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is something that there's just a problem with it. I have family members that are allergic to dogs. Like, having a dog that has a better temperament than a poodle, but also has its good qualities of growing hair so that more people can be around them is, it's very attractive.
Yeah, it would be a valuable, set of characteristics for sure to having a dog.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it's really hard to, I don't understand why he's so hard on himself. I do think that it kind of, cause once he did it, he's not the only person that's ever bred Labradoodles. I don't think at this point either.
Well, yeah, I would guess that other people he may have been the first, but not the only person.
Yeah, so...
But it's...
There's only so much... Because that demand was there, I guess it obviously led to some shady practices from some persons.
Yeah, and he feels responsible for having kind of kicked off that boom. But, I don't know. It's hard to say that that's necessarily 100% bad. Because, I mean, I think there have been people who... have been helped with this, the people who, if you needed guide dog or...
Yeah, especially that first person cited in the article, it's a real person in need of something that, needed the hypoallergenic qualities of a poodle or some other type of hair dog.
Yes.
Because, I mean, there are other options, I would imagine. But this one kind of made the most sense.
Yeah. But I don't know. I thought it was an interesting article. I guess the kind of the downsides of overbreeding. But in terms of people who may be out there thinking about the next dog to get, maybe if you don't have to get a Labradoodle, don't get a Labradoodle.
Yeah, I'm always an adopt don't shop kind of character. So that's what I'll throw out there. Adopted both my dogs. Melissa adopted her cat, and we adopted our two cats that we currently have. So there is that. And the next pair will likely also be of that variety.
It seems to have worked out pretty well for you.
Yep. And I know that just even as a pure breed themselves, and I'm ready to kind of punch myself in the face, like I know that boxers have problems, and I know that I'm probably going to get another boxer again at some point. So even if you don't, even if you aren't crossbreeding currently, you can still have a lot of problems with purebred dogs. And really, boxers aren't purebred because they're a mix of two different German dogs. Is originally where they came from.
Huh.
I'm trying to remember what they were, but it's been a long time since I read that article. It's like I read it when I first got Cayenne, and I retained the knowledge for some length of time, but it's just right out of my brain pocket.
Not the sort of thing you need to know day to day. Yeah.
No, the origins of boxers. But yeah, I mean, I guess there's always been some level, and I guess that's the other reason why I don't feel or feel like the guy shouldn't be beating himself up. There's always been some level of crossbreeding in dogs.
Right.
Like, because I feel like that was in the 1800s at some point when the boxer breed became a breed.
Well, the whole idea of breeds is a little weird, really. I mean, they're all dogs, right?
Correct.
It's like a breed is just like sort of a set of characteristics that we've decided, you know, are good, I guess. You know, that kind of describe the characteristics of a dog that we're going to call a breed. You know, it's just like, I don't know. The weird thing about dogs is there's such genetic variation within that species that you can have like a Chihuahua and like a Mastiff, you know, that technically could, you know, breed together.
Yeah, that would be uncomfortable at one least way one or the way. Other.
Yeah. So it's a unique situation, I guess, with dogs, but
yeah,
they're really all just dogs.
Yeah, it is pretty weird that there is that much of a variation between all of them. Because I mean, I know that there are some differences in cats, but I don't feel like it's quite as wide as it is in dogs. Like the variation.
No, I mean, if you open it up to, you know, felines, your lions and tigers are pretty different.
Oh, well, yeah, never mind. Yeah, I think...
I don't think there could be... I don't think they're the same species, even, though. Really? Do you think? I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're all felines.
But I don't think they could interbreed, you know.
Even if
you somehow were able to imagine that happening.
You don't think a house cat and a lion can...
That would be quite a pull for that house cat. I mean...
He would be telling his own voice.
One charming motherfucker.
He would definitely have bragging rights the rest of his life.
Yeah. I would say so. That's got to be legendary in the cat world.
Tommy the Cat is my name. And I'm proud to be.
I'm not even sure that was part of that story.
No, it was not part of that story. Oh, but I am looking forward to seeing Primus with Slayer here soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a good time to wrap up the show and talk about the you provided the Beltane beer today, and it's from New Holland Brewing, the Poet Oatmeal Stout.
Got a kind of silhouette of a raven seeming to caw against the background of the full moon.
Yeah, because I do believe they are out of Baltimore, are they not?
New Holland. No, I'm not sure. Baltimore would be.
Oh, Michigan.
Michigan, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Holland, Michigan.
So I'm not sure necessarily.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought that they had tied in with the Edgar Allan Poe. But, I mean, they are definitely going with the Edgar Allan Poe theme here, though.
Yeah, I think so. I'm not sure. The poet most associated with a raven has got to be Edgar Allan Poe, in my
book. Right.
Maybe you're, you know, that's just for me.
But it's a pretty tasty beer. Like, I do feel like I underdrink dark beers now because the wife only drinks dark beers.
Mm.
I feel like I just noticed that tendency recently.
Well, the weather was getting a little chillier today and recently. So I think I was feeling trying something a little darker than usual. And it's a pretty good one, I gotta say.
Yeah. Yeah. Strong recommendation. I would think that anyone listening to this should be able to find that in their grocery store. So go ahead, have at it. New Holland Brewing.
A beer that you may have a chance of finding, which is something of a rarity for this program.
Oh, man. Yep. That's at Ghoster33. I'm at DeFrango11. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.